Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Football History Headlines on the Best of the Pigskin Dispatch, we discuss the meeting of the Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers in Super Bowl X, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories and birthdays, all coming up in just one moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are at the date of January 18th with some exciting and very historic and substantial football history. And we're really glad to share it with you. So let's get you right to your football history headlines.
Let's get right at it because we have a lot of information to cover today. January 18th, 1951, the rules revisions came out at the annual NFL meetings. A rule was instituted that guards, tackles, and centers were ineligible for forward pass, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website. This rule change led to make it what the game is today, where there can be only six eligible receivers on any given play. The widest receiver on each end of the line, the four backfield players. The NFL took control of the original failing Baltimore Colts franchise also. Colts owner Abraham Wattner returned the Baltimore franchise and its players' contracts back to the NFL for $50,000 in cash. Those former Baltimore Colts players were made available in the upcoming 1951 NFL draft at the same time as the college players were picked. The Colts were originally members of the AAFC, and when that league disbanded, they, the Browns, and the 49ers were absorbed into the NFL. In 1953, the name of the Baltimore Colts was resurrected when the NFL granted permission for a struggling Dallas Texans franchise to be taken over by the league. NFL Commissioner Burt Bell challenged the city of Baltimore to sell 15,000 season tickets within 6 weeks, and when they succeeded, the franchise was sold to Carol Rosenblum, who opened up shop as the Baltimore Colts once again. Robert Irsay acquired the Los Angeles Rams franchise in 1972 and then subsequently engineered a big trade of teams with Carol Rosenblum that year. 12 years later, on March 28, 1984, Irsay moved the Colts to Indianapolis, where they rise today. And speaking of that 1951 NFL draft, that same day, January 18, 1951, took place right after the meeting that we just talked about was completed. Kyle Rote from SMU was the first pick by the New York Football Giants. Future Hall of Famers that came out of this draft were quarterback Y.A. Tittle as the third overall pick by the 49ers, Dan Stanfield by the Lions at number 19, and the Bears took Bill George with the 23rd pick. The ProFootballReference.com website also tells us that other future Pro Football Hall of Famers, including Mike McCormick, taken by the New York Yanks, Art Donovan by the Browns, and Detroit's pick of Jack Christensen, and then a guy by the name of Don Shula was picked by the Browns. January 18, 1963, Al Davis became the head coach and the general manager of the Oakland Raiders on this day. Davis had an extremely interesting ride in his pro football career. Al turned the Raiders in 1963 into winners, sporting a 10-4 record in the AFL, after only managing a dismal 9-33 record before as a franchise in their 3 years of existence, prior to Davis being hired as the head coach. Soon after, in 1966, according to the BleacherReport.com article, Al Davis was selected to act as the AFL commissioner and served in that capacity until the league merged with the NFL. It was after this point that Davis returned to Oakland, where he served as a co-owner of the franchise and eventually became the majority owner and the main decision maker of those Oakland Raiders. January 18, 1970, at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, the 20th NFL Pro Bowl took place as the Western teams outlasted those of the East 16-13. Chicago Bears legendary halfback Gale Sayers and George Andre, the defensive end of the Dallas Cowboys, were selected as the game's most valuable players per the OnThisDay.com website. January 18, 1976, at the Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida, the NFL World Championship was settled in Super Bowl X. The Dallas Cowboys, winners of the NFC, were matched up against the AFC champs, the Pittsburgh Steelers. These two teams were filled with future Pro Football Hall of Famers. In fact, there were 12 in all. The Cowboys fielded Roger Staubach, Ray Field Wright, Mel Renfro, and Cliff Harris, while the Steelers countered with Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris, Jack Lambert, Mel Blount, Joe Green, Jack Hamm, John Stallworth, and Lynn Swann. The head coaches, Chuck Knoll and Tom Landry, also ended up getting their bus put in Canton, according to the ProFootballReference.com. The Cowboys had a three-point lead at the half, but the majority of the scoring took place in the final stanza. It was the Steelers that put up two touchdowns in the fourth quarter by some iconic acrobatic catches by Lynn Swann to overcome the Dallas Cowboys' late charge. The final score was the Pittsburgh Steelers 21 to the 17 points of the Dallas Cowboys. Lynn Swann was an obvious choice as the game's most valuable player. Our next headline tells about some wrongs from long ago that were righted. January 18, 1983, the International Olympic Committee restored Jim Thorpe's Olympic medals for winning both the pentathlon and the decathlon 70 years after they were taken away from him, per the NDNSports.com website article. At the 1912 Olympic Games, Thorpe became the first Native American to win Olympic gold years before this ethnic group was accepted as American citizens. After his performance at the Games, Sweden's King Gustav V called Jim Thorpe the world's greatest athlete. The victory and the world acclaim was soured, though, about 6 months later when it was uncovered that in 1909 and 1910, Thorpe had allegedly had his room and board paid for by a semi-pro baseball team that he had played for. The IOC almost immediately stripped Thorpe of those medals and took his name out of the record books while refusing to hear Thorpe's side of the story of allegedly receiving what would amount to be about $25 of his expenses being paid for. After decades of petitioning and the release of the 1912 IOC documents, the Olympic Governing Board returned Thorpe's medals but erroneously listed him as the co-champion of the events. Sorry, there should not be any asterisks next to this great athlete's names and his accomplishments in that Olympics. January 18th, year 2000, Robert Wood Johnson IV, the heir to the Johnson & Johnson Company, was approved by the NFL at the owners' meetings to be able to purchase the New York Jets franchise. Now we'll go to some OnThisDay.com conference championship scoreboard. January 18, 2004, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. The AFC Championship game had the New England Patriots over the Indianapolis Colts 24-14. On the NFC side of the ball in 2004, the game was played this date, had the Phillies Lincoln Financial Field, where the Carolina Panthers overcame the home team Philadelphia Eagles 14-3. January 18, 2009, at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, the AFC Championship game resulted in a Pittsburgh Steelers 23-14 victory over their AFC North rivals, the Baltimore Ravens. That same day in 2009, the NFC Championship game was played at the University of Phoenix Stadium. In the game, the Arizona Cardinals knocked off the Philadelphia Eagles 32-25. January 18, 2015, at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, the AFC Championship game finished up with the New England Patriots outmatching the Indianapolis Colts 45-7. On the NFC side, at CenturyLink Field in Seattle, the NFC Championship game resulted in the Seattle Seahawks taking out the Green Bay Packers 28-22 in overtime, and that made your Super Bowl matchup. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines, and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com, and you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
This is Jeremy McFarland from the Footballist Family Podcast, and I want to encourage you, if you get a chance, to come over to the Footballist Family Podcast, where we look at what makes football special and family to each person. We talk about each team, and we talk about the stories behind why fans love those teams. We encourage you to come and join us in our discussion. Thank you.
You want to make sure you check out that great podcast because it's a good one. Let's go to some Hall of Fame birthdays for this January 18th, and we'll start off in the year 1897 in Houston, Texas. The great Cornell halfback Eddie Kaw was born. According to the FootballFoundation.com's bio on Eddie, it claims that in 1921, when the Penn Quakers hosted the underdog Cornell Big Red, that Eddie Kaw had what was probably his greatest day in football. The undersized Cornell halfback maneuvered his way through a quagmire of mud and slop on the field, scoring 5 of Cornell's 6 touchdowns as the Big Red handed Penn its worst defeat since the series started between the two schools back in 1893. The final score was 41-0 in that contest. Kaw was named as an All-American in 1921 and again in 1922. The National Football Foundation selected Eddie Kaw to be inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1954. January 18th, 1950, we have another great birthday of a legend, and he was born in Birmingham, Alabama. The birth of Pat Sullivan, the fine Auburn University quarterback, is celebrated. Sullivan was a signal calling standout from 1969 through the 1971 seasons with the Tigers. According to his bio on the National Football Foundation website, as a sophomore, he broke the school's records for total offense and passing yardage. The next year, he broke them again as a junior and was named the most valuable player in the Southeastern Conference while earning All-America honors. His senior season, Pat was at his best when he was named as a unanimous All-America and took home the Heisman Trophy. Pat Sullivan was honored with the entrance of the football legacy into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1991. Again, we'd like to thank you for joining us on these football history headlines and the birthdays of Hall of Fame legends as we do daily on the pigskindispatch.com and on your favorite podcast provider. So make sure you hit that subscribe button and you'll know as soon as every episode is released. You can also find all of our episodes on the sportshistorynetwork.com, and there's also some other great podcasts with great celebrity hosts and great guests that'll keep your sports history interest fixed. And you want to make sure you check all those sites. And I guess we'll see you tomorrow, folks. Thanks. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
It was just another ordinary day in the offices of the Pittsburgh Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items, thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is.
Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? A poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where'd you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football. College basketball art. Michael Jordan items.
And so it was that Marla Delft discovered the splendiferous magic of Row One sports memorabilia arts and prints. You can too by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's ROW number 1 today for access to the full Row 1 catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long-sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Act today for 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.